these wonderful singers and our pianist who have vanished for their wonderful renditions. And Lucille, were you surprised by your surprise?
Absolutely. Song? When did that happen?
When
else don't I know?
It was. The songs were created very recently, and Don found glory to sing them, and
brought tears to my eyes.
And at the end, did you get that? That was you writing a poem. And there was
I never used punctuation.
That was you putting the eye on Lucille. Or on Clifton, or on a word
on
in the poem.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That was fun. I had set me and the UB sisters, as you know, for a chorus before I had met you, and the chorus was singing it tonight. And for that, I chose an up tempo. Mm-hmm. And then when I heard you read the poem, you read it in a more relaxed tempo, and I thought I should set it. So I called this Different Sisters. And, and I was trying to capture more of your way of reading than my way of reading.
Well, it brought tears to me.
They all did.
As I say to my classes, does everybody know everything then?
I'm sure the audience would be interested in knowing how soon you turned out these new pieces that you wrote. I mean, this was pretty recent.
Oh, they were going through the mail. I even sent PDF files to Lori within the last few weeks. Very soon. And she and Janice learned them very quickly.
Amazing.
I wasn't asked her anything new, but then when I realized you all be singing Sisters in the up-tempo version, I said, oh, I really want to slow that down. And I said, and I always had wanted to do the mirror one. Mm-hmm. You know, about the city, you're a city of a woman. Mm-hmm. And the one about the fingers. And we didn't have room for putting footnotes. In fact, we didn't even mention this in your program because it was a surprise. But do you want to tell them about the Dahomean women?
Well, first of all, I do want to say that I've been asked what is the fingers metaphor for. Mm-hmm. And I was, in fact, born with 12 fingers. But during those days, and this was in Depew, and I am the African American person born in Depew. My brother is the other one. The doctors thought it was horrible to have somebody so deformed, or that is to say, so different. So they cut my fingers off when I was born, or I just have a little thing. But my hands seem magic to me, and I'm trying to think of what else there is.
Dahomey.
Dahomey was the land. It is not, Dahomey now is a different place from the country of Dahomey on the continent of Africa. People often, one of my pet peeves, in fact, is when people talk about Africa as if it were a country. Mm-hmm. It is, of course, a continent with a lot. And Dahomey, which is now, the old Dahomey is now where the country Benin is on the continent. But that is the land of the Amazon army. And I take great pride in being the daughter, granddaughter, whatever, of Amazon women. I especially took pride in it when I had to have a mastectomy. And I know that the Amazons often cut off a breast in order to better aim their arrows. Isn't that exciting? It kept me alive. And so that was wonderful. I wish my sister's going to be here tomorrow for the reading, and I certainly wish she'd been here today to hear that. And all of the music is so wonderful, so wonderful.
Was that about a sister or a friend who was like
my sister?
It was. I assumed it was a friend for some reason.
Well, it could have been. Yeah. It could have been. I grew up in Buffalo, as a lot of people know, and I have a lot of friends. That's why it isn't disturbing to me at all. People might ask, if they were not nervous about being considered something, they might ask this white lady and this black woman, what in the world, you know? And it was interesting the first time I heard a lot of the things, thinking, what do they know? I loved people talking about nappy hair. That was such fun. Because generally we don't say that in public.
She really doesn't have nappy hair.
No, but she does. to all kinds of women who are like my sisters. I have some here. There are more likenesses than differences. We can all understand the feelings, I like to think. I read about being human. I invite people who have been human or hope to be someday to join with me in our common humanness.
Well, I think that the song about the 38th year is
yes.
a song.
Oh,
yeah.
that Quinn, do you want to say anything about that?
When I read that poem, I just turned 36. My mother is still living, but when I read that poem, just read through the text for the first time, I couldn't, it struck me so strongly, I couldn't even read it without weeping. And then I had to try to read the text aloud without crying, before I could sing it without crying.
And then we both cried.
And then we both cried. Paige turned to cry. It's so powerful, and I think we all have days like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all, whether you're 20 or 18 or 45 or 36 or 38, you wake up, you look in the mirror, and you go. But it's more than that. It's really powerful. That and turning really touched me deeply.
Just the idea of turning into yourself.
Turning into yourself.
The lady
house, yes.
Cage. How many female composers? Do you know of turning out of the expectations of the world? I think that's something women somewhere feel into your own, whatever you're, or trying to discover what your own selfness is. My mother died at 44 years old. I have a sister who died at 50 something. My father died at late 50s. My daughter died at 39. I have a son who died at 39. I'm 70. It is amazing to me. And though Carol said, "How old are you now? Oh my God, whatever."
Just keep going.
I'm so stubborn. I was always the stubborn kid. Just the whole idea at some point in your life, around in the 40s, where I'm a grown-up woman now.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, how do you do that?
Yeah.
I didn't know how to be 45. My mother died at 44. I didn't know what is expected now. And if I may say, my oldest daughter has a five-month-old daughter, and my oldest daughter is 48. She is the tough Amazon woman of our from the home.
Or somebody in the middle. Go ahead with your question, Lega.
So much of writing poetry is about hearing it. I wondered what the experience of hearing the poems and songs has shown you about your own work, maybe in a different light.
It is interesting. Yes, it does. Because I certainly write considering all of the senses, including hearing. The American tongue, especially the American oral tongue, is a very musical language. And so I hear a music, and some of the music that Gwyneth heard in it is not unlike my own. Some is different, but that taught me. Some is different. Why not? That taught me something about it, something that I've always known about language. In that we say a word and we all have meanings for it, and some of the meanings coincide and some do not. But it was interesting to me to hear someone else's someone else's sounds, and sometimes that opens it for me. It doesn't close anything, it opens for me, perhaps for others as well.
Poetry often deals with concise or even understatement, and singing, songs, almost opera, deals with exaggeration. That's just the way it is. And so in a poem where Lucille would talk about loneliness, as just a word, I had not remembered.
I had not expected
such loneliness is a line in the poem when you read it. But in the song, of course, it ends a line in a very low range, and then she's alone, there is no piano, and then the piano comes in. It's the role of the composer to bring a poem that you might read sitting in your chair at home onto the stage. And it's not as dramatic on the stage if you just read straight and through. You must do something. So between the singer in the low range and then the piano coming in the fourths, open fourths, the idea was to capture not only the word loneliness, but the whole feeling mm-hmm. through music. So it would have to be that I would exaggerate. And it's not my nature to say, out of my mother's life into my own. I mean, I'm just not gonna, I don't sing, you know? But you have to, when she sang near the end, out of my mother's life into my own, and she went to a long, high held note, and the piano was very full, that is just the way you would do this in music. It's an important part of the poem, and it's part of the musical process to emphasize it. It's almost like saying to the audience member, get it? You get it? She's alone, or, you know.
And the end sounds, you know. The end sounds being, end is a very kind of personal sound, you know. Hmm.
Yeah.
One isn't lonely with ka-ka-ka sounds. and that's true in poetry as well. One is lonely with that sort of sound.
And it ended with the word woman, and I tried mm-hmm. to illustrate yeah. that by sustaining yeah. the end. Though I didn't have anything left to sustain. I wanted to sustain it longer.
I just wanted to comment on your setting too, because as a wife of a composer and I love poetry, there was such a directness about the poetry and about the music and a lack of interference, of only enhancing but not fussing around and detracting from. I think it was just a beautiful balance of elongating where it needed, or the little Greek chorus commenting or whatever, but not interfering with it. And I think it's amazing that that last song, that something that moves you more than maybe any of the other ones is a flatness. Because I think as you get older, what I find disturbing is that flattening. I can stand pain and joy, but when you have this feeling of blankness and your little figure that just sits there day after day for two bars, I think that, you know, is expressed so beautifully.
The ritornello, you mean?
Yes.
Well, she's good, you know?
The poems, all of the poems, and especially that one, are expressed in a simple language.
Yes.
The feelings may be complex, but Lucille's language, at least for that last one, is a simple language.
Generally.
So if I had Baroque ornamentation, that would not have suited that poem. And in fact, I treated the poem as a ballad. So the opening few measures come each time as though you were singing another verse of a ballad. And that would be appropriate. But also, I have a background more as a folk singer. So I would never be on the end of being overly ornate as it is. The most ornate thing I had was when you sang rah, ha, 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 ha. I mean, that was about it. But, you know, that's just not my language. So that may be one reason I particularly enjoy the straightforward quality of Lucille's poetry.
But it's also more than that. And I'd like to just give the perspective from a conducting standpoint. The thing that I've always loved about Gwyneth's music from the first day I heard it at heart was that it's more than accessible. It's she writes so that the performer looks good and sounds good on stage. She uses her music as a vehicle to make us, the performers, look great. And I can't give a composer a higher compliment than that. I mean, it's just. I mean, she makes Lucille look great. I'm obviously.
That was not hard.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But for the rest of us, it could be more difficult. But you do it. She does it with such facility, seeming facility. And we were talking about this in composition seminar this morning, and I said the same thing, that examining scores, looking at scores and studying them as a conductor to try to reveal them to an audience. With Gwyneth is, I mean, it's just so accessible. It's brilliant. It's so beautiful about how that works. How she helps us do our job so well.
What was the main thing? I'm curious. What was the main thing that kept you going through those years that seemed hard? Because in the poem, stood out to me, describe what was it that kept you going when everything else around you was missing?
I don't know. I am. That's sort of a history in a lot of ways. But when I was a very young girl, what I knew was that I knew a couple of things. One was that I was going to have to learn because I wasn't going to be taught a lot or what I needed to be taught. So learning became part of who I am. And writing poems is who I am. I've never taken creative writing courses or teach them. I knew that I would have to be a woman who was self-sustained and who listened to my selfness in terms of what I do. I think I was born to write poems, and my career has been a surprise to including me. You know, I never would have thought I would do things that I have done. I loved I'm still the best the reader of the world. I come from a family of readers, though neither of my parents graduated from elementary school. But they were great readers. And I never took classes, but I have taught creative writing, and I don't think I'm bad at it. I have a student here. I don't know. And my first book came out, my children were 7, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. And there weren't any panties.
Anyways,
yes, exactly, the whole meaning of that word. But there you are. And nothing was made easy. But it was not impossible.
One thing that Lynn was talking about earlier, when we were actually rehearsing these pieces, about, and you mentioned a little bit before, about the interpretation of the one piece that Lori sang, that Lucille read differently than you set for the first time for choir.
Yeah, Me and You Be Sisters.
Me and You Be Sisters. There was a question earlier about how music brings out poetry in the marriage of the two. And you, as one composer, now have said it two different ways and brought out totally different sides of the same poem.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that's very interesting about being a singer or an interpreter of poetry is listening to different settings of the same poem by different composers. There is a John Duke setting of I Carry Your Heart. There is a Gwyneth Walker setting of I Carry Your Heart. You know, it's very interesting to hear the different things that composers bring out. My question for you is, when you hear your poetry set by two different composers, does one of them strike you as more profound than the other, or do they both speak to you equally? What do you think about it?
Well, I've had that experience. I have a poem called Homage to My Hips.
Yes.
And it's been recorded by a group called Mirage and a group called Girls in the Nose. And that's a group in Texas, a lesbian group.
Uh-huh.
And they did ask if they could change the her to him, or the him to her, I guess. They're just different interpretations.
Because I performed that one today.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, so that's a third.
That's a third, right.
Because those two are very different from each other.
There's your interpretation as you write it. There's the composer's interpretation as he or she envisions the colors in the poetry. And then there's the performer's interpretation on the stage. And then if you take it from a level of choral music, there's the conductor's interpretation. And so it's really interesting how all these layers interact. And I'm just, you know, it's interesting to me to hear your perspective on all of those different layers.
I think that they're all accurate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and the poet, I think, I find things in my own work all the time that I didn't realize were there. Now, of course, I think that my interpretation is the exactly right one. Of course, you know. And in Sisters, remember we were talking last night, and I explained some of the cultural meaning behind, like we're greasing our legs, touching up our edges. In the old days, when one straightened one's hair, the edges always went back. It's reverting to what I'm living in now. And that is just information to help.
Right.
Hopefully that In poetry, people tend to think that a poet, that a, the only thing a poem is the words and their definition. And definition of words, words are not the, are not poem, words are the vehicle through which one does the poem. But there's, every word is its, is its history, its baggage, you know, its music, all of that goes into one poem. And so it's interpreted not just as the definition of these groups of words, but also as the, I mean, you write with your insides and your outside. There are emotional things and spiritual things and historic things. And I tried, because I'm sometimes cursed, sometimes blessed with writing poetry that's accessible, which is, a, you know, in a lot of circles is considered a negative. Imagine that. People can understand it, that's bad. Crazy talk. Well, of which there's quite a bit. But I try to use each word to its fullest possibility. I am not writing for anybody's head. I am writing for their heart and head. And I am also not a believer in either or. I'm a believer in both and. And that has sustained me.
Well, I think anytime we add something on, like an interpretation, you know, part of us is terrified that we're not doing justice to the original. But then for some people it's freeing. I mean, I know of conductors who are so happy to take great liberties with whatever's on the page, and that's their interpretation. And performers do too, and I do too. The only terrifying thing is when the original version shows up. And,
yes.
You know, have I ruined Lucille's poem? Have you ruined my interpretation of Lucille's poem? And have you ruined the choral, you know, we all thinking,
absolutely.
Lucille had in mind this and this, and then, oops, you know, maybe I didn't do it, but as you're explaining, you didn't necessarily, I mean, you might have in mind what you thought it might sound like, but you didn't really write it down in music, so
no.
I'm allowed to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. You should realize how terrifying it is. I never endeavored to meet Lucille. My cousin, who's much braver than I am, arranged for this poetry reading when we met. I never would dream of meeting the poet. I mean, what if I had murdered her poetry? Or, you know,
she would have mentioned it when.
You know,
that kind of a guy.
But I mean, I never would. I don't write set poetry and then think, oh, good, I can't wait for Lucille to hear this. You know, I usually just keep it to myself. And then the frightening thing is when Lucille shows up and we've all done this to her poems.
Oh, I was just going to say, Ms. Clifton, that you're absolutely one of my favorite poets, and I was listening to the 38th year, and what I love about your poetry is it's so accessible to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a lot of younger sisters that I share all of, like, poetry with, because I want to open up their minds. I do it to my friends. I tell my friends I want to be an English teacher, and they look at me like I've grown another head, because their version of poetry is only somebody in a certain position, like the writer, would be able to understand it. And when I hear 38th year, like, it just, it strikes a chord in me. My mother had me at 18. My grandmother had my mother at 16.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all very close in ages. My grandmother's 55 years old.
No.
So as we each gain in years, it's kind of like we're growing together. And, you know, my mom, you know, had to grow up really fast. My grandmother had to grow up really fast. So it kind of feels like we're all going together. And that's, like, my favorite thing about your poetry is that it's accessible to everyone, and everyone's personality and personal history plays a part in how they read the poems.
It's interesting that I've been translated a lot. And the first translations of my poetry were into Norwegian. And you think, what are they hearing? No, we're here. The latest is Slovenian. And I had to figure out where Slovenia was. But in Japanese, and any number of
what I wanted to say, this young man has led into beautifully, and it was to get to the sort of, for me, the, maybe the most important level or layer or whatever in terms of understanding, and that is to these folks here. That how, you know, as a conductor, obviously, again, I'm concerned. Right, you know, are we reaching this audience? Are they being moved by what we're doing and all of this? And so, you mentioned the poet, the composer, the performer, but the thing about both of these great lady's work is not, it's beyond the accessibility. It reaches to the heart of all of our understandings. I mean, I'm a guy. I'm a man. I'm old and I'm white. And I read this poetry. I study this music, and I work with 33 women twice a week to rehearse it and to make it be so. To make it be so. And in the process, in the incredible process of everything, I'm the one who ends up transformed. I mean, it's a great gift. Art is such a wonderful gift. In particular, these two ladies. But this is what art, when we allow it to touch us, is what it does to us. It grows us up. It touches us in ways that we couldn't even imagine, because we're fortunate enough to be in the audience, you know, to just be to be a part of it. It's remarkable. It's just remarkable. Yeah.
I have a question. Often when I read your poetry, and maybe in particular at the time that I really first discovered you, it has very much a healing quality to it. Some of it, most specifically, is clearly for that. How often when you sit down, to write poetry, is it just something that comes up? Is it part of a healing process or a transforming process for you about something going on in your life? Or do you not really think about that?
I think it becomes automatic. It's what happens with my poems. I have, you know, someone once asked me if I wanted to write poems to heal people. I'm trying to heal Lucille. She's a sick puppy. I'm trying to do something. But also, I pay attention. I've learned to pay attention. Mm-hmm. You're talking to someone who, when my first book came out, my kids were 7, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Yeah.
And there weren't any Pampers. Mm-hmm. And my husband just came out of the Marines, and so there wasn't a dishwasher. Some ladies will understand this. Some diapers had to be thrown away. Who's going to wash this thing? But what I have noticed is an illness in the world, and maybe I write out of reaction of trying to understand why. I think art happens, I don't know if you agree or not, art doesn't happen out of what you know, it happens out of what you wonder. Art happens out of the questions, I think, not the answers, because we don't know the answers. Sometimes you come up with a sort of answer. But out of wondering why, you know, I think that's true. But I've done all right with the way I write, so I probably keep doing that.